What up, what up, what up, everybody, and welcome to the Ultimate Patriots Podcast. This is the Patriots Podcast for Patriots fans, by Patriots fans, the place to be, 1 hour commercial free on the New England Patriots and Super Bowl 60 right around the corner. I'm Dr. Dennis Tien, your host. Joining me, as always, is the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. Justin, man, are you as excited as I am for this game on Sunday or what, my man?
You know what? It's tough not to be. I mean, I think Patriots fans everywhere rejoicing in the fact that we get to experience yet another Super Bowl, as we've said, way sooner than we thought. And I'm feeling pretty good about it, man. I don't know about you. I know we talked a little bit about it, but I like our chances this weekend.
I love our chances this weekend, and we'll get into all that. We got a great episode planned. You know, we're going to talk about keys to the game. I got five things that I think are huge. We're going to talk about Milton Williams. We're going to talk about what the story will be on Monday, what it means if they win, what it means if they lose, and how we think it's going to go, right? Because I got a lot of thoughts about what I think is going to happen on Sunday that I want to share. But before we get to any of that, Justin, we have to talk about the biggest story of the day, and that is the Hall of Fame snub of Robert Kraft this morning. We recorded last Tuesday, the last episode, right? And the amount of big news that breaks on Tuesday night and Wednesday morning is freaking uncanny, by the way, because I feel like it happens all the time. But it broke about an hour after we recorded last week that Bill Belichick was a Hall of Fame snub. So we haven't got to talk about that. So we're going to talk about both right now. That's what I want to kick it off with, Justin. And like, look, to me, I'm just going to say it. This is egregious. It is egregious that Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick are not in the Hall of Fame. I don't understand how you can tell the story of the NFL without having Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick as part of that story. And look, I'm sure Roger Craig and LC Greenwood and some of these other guys, I'm sure they're very worthwhile candidates. I'm sure they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But it is going to look absurd and stupid when they are being, you know, put in the Hall of Fame on Thursday night and Belichick and Kraft are sitting at home. Let's call this, Justin, for what this is really about. This is not about Deflategate. It's not about Spygate. Those are excuses. We'll talk about why that's BS in a minute. This is pure and simple about spite, jealousy, and petty resentment towards the two guys, Kraft and Belichick, that ran this league for two decades, that beat all these owners and all these players and all these writers and the teams they loved at their own game for the better part of 20 years, and they're all still hurt by it, and they are taking their revenge by keeping these two guys out of the Hall of Fame. It is an absolute joke. The Hall of Fame looks stupid. It looks out of touch, and I think this is one of the most egregious Hall of Fame snubs that I can think of in all of professional sports.
Yeah, it's disgraceful. And, you know, if you're a Patriots hater out there, which I know there are plenty around the country and around the league, you know, maybe you get a little bit of satisfaction in it. But really, I think the biggest travesty is the fact that beyond hating the Patriots or even liking the Patriots, if you're a Patriots fan, we're all fans of football. It doesn't matter which team you like or, you know, what colors you would hit. Everyone is a, you know, everyone that has an interest in this is an NFL fan, right? And I look at this and I say, as a fan of the NFL, to have the Hall of Fame, which is the highest honor that a player or a coach or an owner can receive, right? It's kind of, you know, the pantheon, the next steps after your playing or your coaching days, right, where you're enshrined in greatness. To have that society so, I just embarrassed and belittled, and not only that, but just kind of shown for really what it is right now, which is purely political.
It's politics at its worst.
It is. And I think whether you like the Patriots or not, whether you like Bill Belichick or not, whether you like Robert Kraft or not, whether you were offended by Spygate and Deflategate or not, this hurts the NFL. So regardless of who you support and who you root for, this is a bad day for all of football.
I agree 1,000%. It is an embarrassing day for the Hall of Fame and a bad day for all of football. And I actually, I mean, is it is it possible, like, to say I feel sorry for Robert Kraft and Bill Belichick that they gave so much of themselves to this game and accomplished so much, and yet now they're being like openly disrespected like this on a national stage, Super Bowl week? I mean, if who among what contributors to this sport in the world deserve to be in there more than these two guys, and yet they're excluded? It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's totally ridiculous. I think, you know, if anything, if you can take a positive away from this, which, you know, there aren't many, but if you can find a positive, it's the fact that at least a lot of the people, right, whether it's former players, the analysts and the pundits, you know, a lot of people who have a voice, right, who people tune into on a regular basis, they're at least speaking out in letting it be known. In a way, it's actually, you know, bringing all of the accomplishments and the success of these two individuals to light, because now people are kind of being forced to talk about the snub and all the reasons why they deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, it really is just a total embarrassment. And I think if you're a Hall of Fame voter, I really think you have to take a deep look in the mirror and ask yourself, you know, if these two guys aren't first ballot Hall of Famers, as far as coaches and owners go, then who is? Because from here on out, anybody else who gets a vote, they will be compared to these two. And when you take into account that they didn't get in on the first try, I think it would just totally demean any vote from here on out.
It's ridiculous is what it is. It's going to be ridiculous to say when some of the people, when they announce their Hall of Fame class on Thursday night, whoever gets in, it's going to look absolutely ridiculous.
Yes.
That those people got in and Belichick and Kraft were excluded. It is absurd. And, you know, like, I'm sorry, Bill Polian. Okay. And I know he said he voted for Belichick. Let me tell you something. That's hogwash. And I'm going to tell you why, because there's only 50 people that vote and they're all tight knit. So I can tell you exactly what Bill Polian did and why this is politics at its worst.
Yeah.
He identified the 11 people that were going to vote against Belichick and Kraft. And then he went and he voted for them. Okay. Yeah. Because he knew he had the votes to sink them. And then he covered his own ass and voted for them.
Yeah.
That's how this works, Justin. That's why the system is so broken. So just because Bill Polian can probably honestly and rightfully stand up there and say, oh yeah, I voted for Kraft, I voted for Belichick, That means nothing to me, because everyone that was in that room or on that Zoom call, because it's a Zoom call now, said it was Polian that was driving the anti-Belichick opposition. Well, that's how that accords, right? You identify the 11 or 12 votes that are going to sink them, and then you vote for them to protect yourself. It is like literally dirty politics 101.
Yeah, it totally was. And, you know, again, I think that is awful as it is, right? And I think we're all, you know, again, whether you're a Patriots fan or not, kind of feeling the snub in the injustice. I think it really does force you to change your view on how you view the Hall of Fame. Like you said, it's dirty politics right now. You would like to think that a place like football in a place like the Hall of Fame is above politics and above this kind of petty grievances and grudges and whatnot. But the truth is that it's not. It's just like any other political institution.
It's not, Justin. And let me tell you, for all the people out there rationalizing this with Deflategate and Spygate, what I want to say and why you're 100% right, why this is politics and pettiness, look, I would easily argue that pumping in crowd noise is way more of a competitive advantage than either Spygate or Deflategate. Did anyone from the Colts dynasty get held up, or was this an issue for any of them? Because they got caught red-handed doing that, right?
Yeah.
The Denver Broncos in the late 90s were fined and caught for cheating around the salary cap. They literally circumvented the cap. They brought in more players than they should have by circumventing the cap to the team that was already the best team in the league. Did one of those guys get held up, right? Did the Pittsburgh Steelers, the biggest cheaters, the biggest cheating scandal in the history of sports that juiced and horse semened their way to four Super Bowls in the 70s, ripping steroids, and all those poor guys died in their 50s and 60s because they did so much steroids? Did any one of them, did Chuck Knoll, did Art Rooney, did any of them get held up? And the answer is no.
Nope.
So they all cheated worse than what anything the Patriots, the stupid gamesmanship of Spygate or whatever was, way worse, all that stuff. and they didn't get held up. And yet Kraft and Belichick did. That is proof positive that this was just politics and pettiness at its worst.
It really was. And look, I guess just to focus in on Spygate in Deflategate for a second, you know, how you really know, to your point, that it's actually really not about that is because the Patriots dynasty under Belichick and Kraft was a 2+ decade endeavor, right? And if you're going to point to two isolated incidents that affected two games over that 20+ season run, you can't tell me that what they accomplished goes beyond those two incidences. Remove those two incidents. You could even remove two of the Super Bowls, and the two of them still have a Hall of Fame pedigree.
Yes, and to your point, don't forget this team won 3 of the 6 Super Bowls after Deflategate, right, and after Spygate.
Right.
Look at what they accomplished from just Deflategate beyond. Right. It's still in of itself Hall of Fame worthy.
Yes. So exactly. So anybody who's using that as a justification, that's a red herring. That's kind of a false flag.
No, it is total fraud and hypocrisy. If you weren't there saying that about Chuck Knoll or Art Rooney or Bill Polian or Tony Dungy or Peyton Manning, and now you're going to say it about Kraft and Belichick and maybe Brady, then you're a fraud and a hypocrite. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. So I think it's it truly is a shame. But like I said at the beginning, I'm glad that at least enough people are speaking out against it and calling it for what it is, because it truly is a travesty. And I think we should all, as football fans, be upset by what they did. Because, hey, if it happens to New England and the Patriots fans 20, 30, 40 years down the road, who knows who else it could happen to? It could happen to your team and your owner and your coach.
Well, and to me, it's like they're both going to get in eventually, but Bill Belichick's, what, 74? Robert Kraft's 83?
Yeah.
What are we going to wait for someone to drop dead and then you're going to put them in?
Right,
You have an opportunity to do the right thing by these guys while they're still alive and they can appreciate it, and we all know they deserve it, and you let your petty BS in politics interfere with it. I think it's sickening.
And even if they get in, you know, there is a clear distinction in the Hall of Fame, you know, between a Hall of Famer and a first ballot Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. That carries weight, that distinction. You know what I mean? So just the fact that they took that away from them is a shame.
Robert Kraft has been rejected 14 times now, which is disgusting.
Kraft. Yes. But I'm saying Belichick. Yes.
If there was ever a first ballot Hall of Famer, it's Bill Belichick.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, it's insane. All right. Let's talk a little about the actual game, right? We've had our rant. I'm going to take a deep breath to cool myself down here. Calm down. A little meditation exercise. Let's get into this game, because I got a lot, Justin, to say about this game, and I'm excited for the game, of course, but I think I have a few keys that I think are critical to this game. And I want to start with this, which is number one. Okay. You said this last week and you were spot on. I am so tired of hearing about how bad CJ Stroud was, and how bad Justin Herbert was, and how bad Jarrett Stidham was, and the Patriots defense getting zero credit for that. And when we talk about what kind of Sam Darnold we're going to get on Sunday, I think this is number one key to the game. Can we just realize he's not going against the Rams defense? Mm-hmm. The Rams defense sucks. The Patriots deserve credit. The Patriots defense is a totally different species than what he's faced in the last 3 weeks. You're not going to see the Sam Darnold, I think, that you saw of the first 2 weeks of the playoffs, beating up on that trash Rams and that trash 49ers defense. He's going against a real deal defense in the Patriots, and I think that is key number one to this game, Justin. Which Sam Darnold do we get? Can we bring out seeing ghost Sam Darnold? Is he still hiding somewhere deep inside there, you know? Can we get the old Sam Darnold out? I think that's key to the game, number one.
Well, I mean, look who you're asking. You know, I've said even throughout his entire, you know, run of success this year, that I am waiting for Sam Darnold of old to rear his head and have a big screw up game, right? And I think that's going to happen. You know, look, the 49ers defense missing some of their best players through injury and, you know, lost in free agency this past season. The Rams, good defense, not a great defense. This Patriots defense, I'm sorry, you might not have been able to say it in the first half of the season. This is a great defense now. All right, in the Seahawks, you know, they're a little, I don't want to say one dimensional, but they're not as, I guess, diversified in their offense as I would say the Patriots are. Yes, they got a good running game. Yes, JSN is really good, but you know, it's kind of JSN or bust in that passing game for Sam Darnold, as far as I'm concerned. Sam Darnold,
Cooper Kupp is a shell of what he was.
He's a shell of what he was. You know, look, when like Cooper, like a 30-something year old Cooper Kupp, who's a shell of what he was, AJ Barner, Jake Bobo, random guys are, you know, you're the other guys you're leaning on. You know, you're not super dimensional. The other thing I'll say is Sam Darnold, we all know, is a different quarterback when he's under pressure. In this Patriots, this Patriots team has shown, especially in this AFC in this AFC playoff run, that they can get after the quarterback, including against good offensive lines. Broncos was one of the best offensive lines in the NFL, right? So I truly do think we're going to see a different Sam Darnold. And I shouldn't even say different. I think we're going to see the old Sam Darnold, the real Sam Darnold.
I think what we're going to see is the Sam Darnold we saw for the majority of this regular season, which is, hey, I don't think he's a bad player. I think he's a good quarterback. He led the league in turnovers this year.
Right.
And I'm going to call it right now. I guarantee you all, Sam Darnold is going to give the Patriots at least two turnovers in this game. Mark it down. They're going to get pressure on him. They're gonna rattle him. You know, it's not going to be like as easy as it looked against that trash Rams defense. I really am betting on Sam Darnold giving us at least two turnovers on Sunday.
Listen, I got two big bets in, and one of them is Patriots money line straight up, and the other one is the Patriots money line parlayed with Sam Darnold at least one interception, because I think that is an absolute lock. Sam Darnold is not going to come out in play the games that you've been seeing him play recently. I just think the Patriots defense is too good. They're too quick. They're too clever, right? You know, we've heard about teams recently playing the Patriots defense saying they had no clue what the defense was even doing, right? The Patriots are just playing, I think, at an elite level right now, championship caliber defense. And I think they're going to get after Sam Darnold, and they're going to disrupt him. And not only just the defense, you know, Let's talk about the fact that this is the most pressure that Sam Darnold has ever faced. And this is not a guy who historically deals well with the pressure. So that combined with this defense, I can't see a world in which Sam Darnold comes out and wows us.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, let's just talk about the basic fact that, like, if you're a pocket quarterback who is not super mobile, the absolute worst thing that you want is pressure coming from the middle.
Yes.
And the Patriots in these three playoff games with Milton Williams and Kyrie Tonga and Barmore all healthy and all systems go, they've been getting so much pressure into the middle, through the pocket, in the center of the field. And that's a bad, bad matchup for Sam Darnold, because there's no place for him to go. He can't step in to throw, and he doesn't have the mobility to get outside.
100%. I saw a stat, and you know, I don't want to butcher it, but it basically, you know, it was talking about defensive tackles with or defensive linemen with the most, I believe it was pressures or something to that nature this season. And Barmore and Milton Williams were 4 and 5 on the list in the top five, and that's factoring in that Milton Williams missed quarter of the season, right? So those two guys can clearly get pressure up the middle. The counter side of that is that the Seahawks center and one of their guards gave up some of the most pressures for offensive linemen this season.
They also have a really good guard too, the rookie they drafted
It's the other one.
Yeah.
So between that combo just says to me that the Patriots interior is going to be able to put pressure on Sam Darnold. And when he's moving, when he's uncomfortable, when his back's against the wall, that's when he struggles. I think it's very similar to what we saw with CJ Stroud. When CJ Stroud has a clean pocket and he has time, he's a pretty good quarterback. When he's got pressure and he's got to be on the run, like I think they're going to do to Sam Darnold, it's a whole different animal.
But you can say that about a lot of quarterbacks, and it's 100% true. You know, is when any quarterback is under constant pressure, they look bad. That's just the nature of the sport. All right, let's go to key number two, and I think it ties in. I have five of them, but I'm going to transition to this one because I think it ties in what we're talking about, which is, will Seattle be able to run the ball? Because I'm sorry, again, Sam Darnold is not the kind of quarterback that's going to carry the team. And if you look at how the Seattle offense has been productive all year, it's been on the backbone of that running game. I think the Zeke Charbonnet injury is a sneaky huge injury that no one's talking about. I know he's been out a few weeks. That guy is a really good 1A kind of running back. I think against a defense like this, Pat's defense, I think it's going to hurt them more than it did against some of the other teams in the playoffs. But look, you tell me this. Can Seattle run the ball? Let me ask you one question. When this Patriots defense has been healthy this year, and they've had Tonga and Barmore and Milton Williams and Jack Spillane out there, name one team this season that has been able to run the ball on this defense, going back to even the beginning of the year. Remember when they had that run where they didn't give up more than 60 rushing yards for how many games in a row? And the answer is no one. No one has run the ball on this team. I don't think Seattle's going to be able to run the ball against this Pats team. Will the Seahawks, Justin, be able to run the ball?
No, for all the answers you just mentioned. I'm glad you said it because I was going to bring it up. The Charbonnet injury is a lot bigger than I think most people realize. That was a very good 1-2 punch that they had right now. Kenneth Walker's a little bit more of a receiving threat. Charbonnet tended to get a lot of work around the goal line. And he was kind of a little bit of that ground and pound change of pace. Not having him is massive. And I just want to emphasize that. And to your point, you know, it began even back in week 4 or 5, whatever it was, with the Bills, you know, when you faced the eventual rushing champ of the league in James Cook and one of the most mobile quarterbacks in the NFL in Josh Allen, and the Patriots shut them both down on the ground. And from there on out, they were kind of off to the races while they were healthy. I think this team, now that everybody's healthy, knock on wood, I think they're going to really stifle the Seahawks. I think they're going to make the Seahawks one-dimensional. And that's going to, and I think that kind of feeds into the whole Sam Darnold struggle. It feeds into the fact that in that passing attack, they really only have one weapon, you know, that you have to worry about. And I think I think that run game is going to get stifled by a healthy Patriots defense. Yeah.
110% agree on that. I think that one of the reasons I like this matchup for the Pats is because they're going to be able to stop that Seattle running game. I think people are focusing too much on Drake May and how he's performed in the playoffs versus Darnold and how he's performed in the playoffs, and really not considering in some of the external factors that went into that. And they're really not considering the fact that the Patriots have the stoutest run defense in the NFL.
They do.
And this is a Seattle team that literally lives on running the ball. And it's not, I don't think Seattle's going to be able to run the ball on Sunday. And I like one of the many reasons I like the Patriots in this game.
Yep. I couldn't agree more.
All right, you just hit on another one. Let's go to key number 3. Okay. How do you stop Jaxon Smith-Njigba? Okay. Best wide receiver in the NFL. I think he was the Sporting News Offensive Player of the Year. 1,800 yards, 11 touchdowns, 117 catches. He's a true number one receiver. The Patriots have nothing on offense like him, by the way. The question becomes, how do the Patriots match up on this guy? You've got Gonzalez. You've got Carlton Davis. You've got Marcus Jones. Craig Woodson has been excellent in the safety position. Do you put Gonzalez on a man-to-man? Do you put Jones on him and double team him with a safety? What's the right solution, Justin, for stopping JSN?
Well, I'll kind of give you the roundabout answer to that, which first off, I don't truly think you stop him. I think he's one of the guys, you know, he's going to eventually get his, to what extent he produces. I think that's the big question mark, right? But here's my thing. If you can stifle the run game, and you can make everybody else who is, you know, for all intents and purposes, a bunch of C and D level players, non-factors, right? If you can take out Barner and Bobo and 30-something-year-old injured Cup, and JSN just has a average game, I think that will be a highly successful formula for the Patriots. And to your point, how do you do it? I think you keep Gonzo on him the entire game. I think, look, you got one of the best cornerbacks in the league, right? He's really kind of making his bones this year, you know, making a name for himself. I think you say, look, you're not going to completely shut this guy down, but we have the type of guy who can at least moderate and temper what the production that you're going to get out of JSN. I think you shadow JSN the entire game with Gonzo. You stop the running game and you make the rest of the weapons of that offense kind of obsolete. And you live with it.
Yeah, I think this is like the key matchup to this game is, you know, can Gonzalez stop JSN? Because, I mean, I would say one of the things I've thought of this week and just looking at the players and, you know, their games is like, is Gonzo really a great matchup with JSN? You know, JSN is kind of a shifty guy. He's a really small guy. I think Gonzalez is a reasonably fast corner, but he's not one of these super quick guys like a Marcus Jones. You know, part of me wonders if they might be better off, you know, putting Jones on JSN. He operates from the slot, by the way, JSN so often. You know, you have a great slot corner on this team. Maybe you do put Jones on him and then double team him at times. I don't know. There's just one thought that's crossed my mind.
I mean, realistically, though, I think whether you do Jones in a double team or whether you just keep Gonzo on a man-to-man the entire game, I don't think just JSN enough is enough to beat you. And so that's why I think, you know, if you're able to kind of suppress the rest of the weapons of that offense in the run game and the passing game, you kind of live with whatever JSN puts up, because I just don't think JSN alone wins you a Super Bowl against this defense.
Well, the one thing I'll say, and I think you just kind of hit on this, is like, you're right. Like, has anyone stopped JSN? Can you truly stop him? But if there is a team in this league that has like the ammunition to like seriously slow him down, it is the Pats, because they have Gonzalez, because they have, you know, Marcus Jones. And I think in one of the matchups that I like for the Pats in this game, Justin, and I think you'll agree with this, is I think Carlton Davis will match up very well with Cooper Kupp. And I don't think Cooper Kupp is going to be able to beat Davis in one-on-one coverage, you know, like some of the other faster wide receivers that he's had to face. I think that's a great matchup for Carlton Davis is Cooper Kupp. So, you know, if you can somehow use Gonzalez to neutralize JSN, and then you've got Carlton Davis in a very favorable matchup, in my opinion, on Kupp. I mean, and you stop the run in your front seven. To me, this is the essence of why I think people are sleeping on the Patriots in this game.
100%. And I mean, let's not forget, you know, part of what helps whoever it is on JSN do their job, whether that's Gonzo, whether it's Jones in a double team, whoever is tasked with you know, blanketing JSN and in mitigating the damage, that all gets significantly helped by the fact that your defensive line and your front seven can get pressure on the quarterback and make Sam Darnold uncomfortable. So it's kind of a ripple effect, right? You get Sam Darnold uncomfortable, you get him on the move. You know, you create the pressure, you get them thinking, and that's going to help your secondary, whatever your game plan is, make the most out of their coverage.
Yeah, 1,000%. All right, let's talk about key number four. And look, we got to talk about Drake May, because I think obviously that's a huge part of this game. Which Drake May are we getting? And I want to start with this about May, Justin, and that is, you know, we saw Drake May in the regular season. And we saw a guy that was just lights out, best player in the league. And the last 3 weeks, he really hasn't been like that. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But can we just start with an acknowledgement, and maybe you disagree with this, that Drake May got hurt at some point in this postseason, right? What we saw from him in Denver, the throws into the ground, inaccurate throws. The Patriots are almost afraid to throw the ball at times. That is so unlike anything we saw at any point in this regular season. You know, he was put on the injury report on Wednesday. He missed practice on Friday for a quote-unquote illness. You heard Vrabel's comments about him. You've heard his own comments about himself, including today saying he's turned the corner, which I thought was kind of interesting, because does that mean there was really something there, I guess, right? There's just so much smoke that there has to be some fire. I don't know if May is really seriously hurt. I wouldn't put that out of bounds, to be honest with you, or if it's just he's a little beat up. We're going to see, I think, pretty quickly on Sunday. But I do believe that Drake May got hurt at some point in this postseason. And I'll even go one step further, Justin. I don't think it happened in Denver. I think it probably happened against the Texans. And I think that he just got exacerbated in Denver.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. I mean, look, I think any football player or football coach will tell you this. At this point in the season, especially if you make it to the playoffs and play three playoff games, you're hard pressed to find a guy who's fully healthy on your roster, right? I think at this point in the year, it being banged up is just kind of par for the course. I do agree with you. I think May got banged up in that divisional round against the Texans. There were a couple times, you know, he kind of fell awkwardly in that game on his shoulder, and that's probably the culprit for what we're seeing now. Do I think it's enough that I'm super concerned? I can't say that I am. I'm not. And I think part of it is because, look, you know, with what they got as far as training, and, you know, they got the Toradol shots and all that stuff, I think you can get a guy right for one game when it matters. You know,
I think it depends on the extent of the injury, to be perfectly honest.
But do you think?
And I guess one thing I would say is that, look, I mean, he could just be banged up, but I'm not excluding the possibility that he's got a major injury in his shoulder either, one that might not be able to be worked around. I mean, there is a line, you know, where like you can shoot it up, you can inject it, you can do all this stuff. But if it's that big of an injury, like there's a reason why players miss games. And I don't think that's what's going on here. I want to be clear about that. I don't think that's the case. But just with all the smoke around this, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it was something like that. And I think, you know, tomorrow, Wednesday, is the first official practice. It's going to be the first time the media gets to see May throw the ball. And I think that's going to be a huge indicator for what this guy's going to look like Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And look, obviously we can't sit here and say for 100% certain one way or the other whether he is injured or whether he isn't. And if he is it a bad injury that's going to really hamper his performance on Sunday, or whether it's something he can shake off with a little training and a little medicine. But, you know, the one thing I will say about Drake May is, you know, and I had mentioned this to you, I think, earlier this week, you know, I'm not super worried about him. I think he's going to have his best performance of the postseason in the Super Bowl. Yeah. It's going to be the best weather he's had, which, you know, it is what it is. It's tough sometimes in the frigid cold, in the snow, et cetera, to go out there and play quarterback. And the other thing, too, is I think we're overblowing, you know, a little bit of his performance in the postseason. You know, I said this to you.
Yes, you know, I agree with that.
Listen, only two quarterbacks this year threw for 300 yards on the Chargers defense. One of them was Drake May. Only two quarterbacks this year threw for three or more touchdowns on the Texans defense this year. One of them was Drake May. And then he goes into the game against Denver. Granted, I'll even give you, maybe he's got a shoulder injury. He's playing in blizzard conditions. It's absolutely awful. And he comes out of that game with no turnovers and transforms himself into a mobile threat, a rushing quarterback, and has one of his best ground performances of the year for himself. So I think it's a little bit overblown talking about his performance in the postseason. I think he's primed to have a big Super Bowl. Now, obviously, all of that hinges onto the extent of his injury. That's to be seen. But I'm not maybe as worried as some people out there.
Yeah, and I think another thing that hasn't been said enough this week is Seattle's defense they played maybe a little bit of a tougher schedule than the Pats. But they also feasted on some bad quarterbacks this year.
Yeah.
And I don't think Seattle's defense is as good as it's looked at times in the postseason. I mean, Stafford kind of moved the ball pretty well on them last week. You know,
yep.
I mean, I'm not saying they're by any means a bad defense, but I don't think Seattle's defense is like quite as good as certainly Houston, probably LA, and even Denver. Like, I just feel like there was a lot of bad quarterbacks on the schedule. I think I agree with you. We're going to see the best game of the year from Drake May this week. I think the weather will help. I think the 2 weeks of rest will help. And you know, as long as he doesn't have that, you know, massive injury, which hopefully he doesn't, it's sort of trending that he doesn't, and we'll find out. But you know, if he's healthy or even remotely healthy, I agree. This is going to be his best game of the postseason.
100%. And the one thing we didn't mention is we're giving arguably one of the best OCs in the game 2 weeks to prepare for this,
yes,
for this defense
and
Vrabel, right? To put a game plan together. And I'm sorry, look, Mike McDonald, you know, he might be a good young coach. I know a lot of people think highly of him. In the Clint Kubiak guy, I know he's kind of a hot commodity right now, but I'll take Vrabel and McDaniel over McDonald.
Well, you just
hit
the fifth key. So there you go.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
There we go.
Get a prize. Well, that was it, right? Like the coaching, right?
Yeah.
And you know, the coaching advantage. And Justin, does the Super Bowl experience count here? Because the Patriots have a lot of Super Bowl experience, yeah, between McDaniels and Vrabel on the coaching staff, and Seattle doesn't have any.
Well, I think not only does it count for the game, but I think it counts for the preparation heading into the game, right? Like, look, we've heard a lot of people criticize, you know, how certain teams prepare and handle the 2 weeks, how they handle Super Bowl week, the media, the practice, the preparation, the hype, all that stuff. You got two guys who have been there and done that. Both, McDaniels has done it multiple times as a coach, and Vrabel did it multiple times as a player. And I think between the two of them, you're going to see a Patriots team that is, quite frankly, more prepared than the Seahawks, thanks to their coaches. And, you know, I know you can't read too much into this, but you're already kind of starting to see a little of it. I don't know how much you've watched of, you know, the kickoff to Super Bowl week out in Santa Clara.
Yeah.
The Patriots team looks loose. They look energetic. Yeah, totally. They look like they're having fun, right? Like, they don't look like they're a bundle of nerves, like this is the biggest moment of their life, like, oh crap, what do we got coming up? And I think part of that is because of the coaches that they have getting them ready.
Yeah, I agree 1,000% with that. And, you know, as much as it's Vrabel, I think it's also McDaniels. And, you know, Josh McDaniels has coached in 10 Super Bowls right now, which is really amazing, right? So you give this guy 2 weeks. We already know he's one of the best offensive coordinators in the game. And I think giving him 2 weeks to prepare with all that experience, I think that's a huge advantage for the Patriots. I really do.
Yeah, it's a massive advantage. And let's not forget, too, you know, even just from a player standpoint, I don't think the Seahawks have anybody that's maybe they do. But if they do, there's not many guys that have Super Bowl experience on that roster. So, you know, both rosters are kind of new and naive to the experience for the most part. So then you look at the coaches and it's not even close as far as what the Patriots coaches are bringing to the table.
1,000%. I think in general, I think McDonald is a great young coach, but I do think he's an advantage. I'm sorry.
Like,
I think he's just a better coach.
Yes.
I really do.
100%.
Okay. I know you wanted to talk a little bit about some of the things that you saw with the similarities with this team and the 2001 team. So we can do a new segment here. Ask the Doc, right? So you can ask me your question. So take it, man.
All right. Well, you know what? Look, we don't have to get crazy here, but, you know, I'm looking, and I'm sorry, there are definitely some similarities between 2001 in 2025 here. You know, you got a second year quarterback. You have a coach who's, you know, just newly with the team. You're heavy underdogs. Playing an NFC West team. I think there's just a lot of parallels that you can draw. I mean,
second year quarterback.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, second year quarterback. Like, does it almost seem too perfect that the stars are aligning like this?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, I definitely think there is some parallels there. And I think the biggest parallel is just like the way this team just came out of nowhere. And and like I heard someone say, well, when was the last time a 4-win team made it or won a Super Bowl next year? And I don't know the answer to that question, but the first thing that came to my mind was the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2001 after winning 5 games in 2000. So, you know, I think that's the biggest parallel, that just like a team that was a downtrodden team, a downtrodden franchise that just, you know, stumbles on a quarterback, very different places in the draft, mind you, but hits lottery in the quarterback, brings in a great coach. That's another parallel, right? The coach quarterback dynamic thing. The way Vrabel has coached this year, I mean, yeah, he reminds me a lot of Parcells more than Belichick in terms of his demeanor. But in terms of like, how many times this season have you been sitting there saying, this team is so prepared? This team is so, well, like the game management, the situational football. I mean, it has been Belichickian when Belichick was in his prime.
I mean, 100%. And the other thing too, I'll say is, you know, the defense, right? Championship level defenses. Like, look, I know that 2001 team had Tom Brady, but that wasn't Tom Brady. That was a second year Tom Brady, right? That was really a team that was carried by that defense. And if you would ask me at the beginning of the year, or quite frankly, even halfway through the season, whether this defense had that type of potential or you know, was the type of defense that could carry you all the way to Super Bowl, I probably would have said no. But the way this team has come on in the back half, the way they've gotten healthy now, the way some of their guys are stepping up. I mean, if you ask me, you know, what the weakest, you know, position was in that defense, I would have said their safeties. I would have said Woodson and Hawkins, right? And those are, especially after you shipped out Kyle Duggar and Jabril Peppers, and those two guys are playing lights out, especially in the back half of the season. So
Woodson started all 20 games this
right,
year.
Right.
It was in.
Yes.
He's been like a stalwart back there.
100%. So I love what this team is doing on defense. I love the coaching. I love the fact that the pressure is on Seattle, to be completely honest. And you kind of just get to go out there and prove the doubters wrong and have fun with it. And that's what it looks like this team is doing. Again, you know, I'm watching them down there in Santa Clara, all smiles on their faces. They seem really loose and they just seem ready to get after it.
Well, that's it. And the other parallel with the 2001 team is the fact that like that 2001 team was a locker room team. Like they were a strong locker room and a great culture. And clearly, you know, this team is like built on that. So that you know, and that's a big parallel as well.
It is. It truly is. So, I mean, you know, overall, I look at it and I say, how fitting would it be for a new dynasty to be reborn? But you know what? Truly, it doesn't even need to be a dynasty again for it to be a success. Just the fact that you're here, you know, as quickly as you are, working with what you got, and you can potentially go out there and win another Super Bowl, you know, at this point in time, I think is whether they don't go back for the rest of the Vrabel, right, Drake May, you know, tenure. I think if they go out and win the Super Bowl, you consider that a success.
Yeah. And I mean, I've been saying that for a few weeks now, right, Justin. I mean, you don't know, there's nothing assured. We still don't know exactly what Drake May is.
Yeah.
As much as I love the guy and I think he's amazing and I've been so impressed, you know, I'm not 1,000% sold that he's going to be a 15-year franchise quarterback either. If I'm being just totally honest, I still think there needs to be a little bit of development there. So you're right. I mean, this is an opportunity to go out and win a seventh title. You know, this is a very winnable game against a Seattle team that is a good team. And perhaps the better team, but not the Patriots have a better coach and the better quarterback, and that equalizes things. You know, this is a game the Patriots very much can win if they go out and they play a good game on Sunday.
100%.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that. Like, what happens on Sunday, Justin? What are you expecting? How does this game go? I want to ask you who the MVP is, who has the first score, and what the story is on Monday that we're all talking about. So that was a lot. So let's just whittle that down. What happens on Sunday? How does this game go? And what do you see happening? Who do you see winning?
Yeah, I mean, what I see happening is, you know, we kind of just hinted at it, you know, and I'm just going to kind of deduce from what we've put forth is the fact that you got two really good defenses. You got a Seahawks quarterback that we don't really trust in a big moment. And we got a Patriots quarterback who is potentially injured. And, you know, although I think he's going to play well, who knows what version of Drake May we're going to get. And so for that reason, I think we're going to get a defensive battle. I think we're probably in for a lower scoring game. I don't think it's going to be too high flying offenses out there. And at the end of the day, I see the Patriots winning. And I'm going to say 26-20.
Okay. I like that. I like that score. I think that right now we are underestimating Drake May because I think he was hurt, because he played three of the five best defenses in the NFL, and because the weather was really bad.
Yeah.
People have undervalued him and what he can do. And I think we're overvaluing Sam Darnold because of the oppositions he played in the postseason.
Yep.
And I think Drake May is better than he's shown the last 3 weeks. And I think Sam Darnold is worse than what he's shown the last 2 weeks. And so you add it all up. And to me, I think the story on Monday is going to be, number one, Drake May, okay, in an MVP caliber performance against the Seattle defense that wins this team a Super Bowl. And number two is going to be this defense. And the fact that this defense, and in particular, Milton Williams, and I talked about this with you earlier this week, Milton Williams was one of the best free agent signings in the history of the NFL because of the way he disrupted games and the way he will disrupt this game on Sunday. So I think that's going to be what we're saying on Monday.
Yeah, I love that. Look, I mean, I'll give you two MVP picks. I'll give you the safe, you know, kind of what I think will probably happen, which is Drake May for MVP. But then I'll give you the fun one that I sprinkled a little bit of money on, one that I don't think is as crazy as it might sound.
I can't wait because I have one of those and I want to hear what you have to say because I wonder if it's the same as mine.
I'm going to say Marcus Jones.
Okay, that's a good one.
And I'm going to say Marcus Jones because I could totally see a guy like that having two interceptions in this game, potentially even a pick six, even maybe a run, a punt return for a touchdown. And at the end of the game, you know, we talk about a guy like Marcus Jones being the impact player, you know, just absolutely being a difference maker. So that's my fun MVP pick.
Okay. So I agree with you. The likely MVP will be Drake May. Yeah. And that's just because of the quarterback thing.
Course.
But the dark horse MVP that I'm going to put some money on,
yeah,
and I think is good odds, is Travion Henderson. I think he's like plus 1,500 right now. And we've seen all year long that this guy is a home run hitter.
Yeah.
And, you know, you get this guy on a dry track on a good weather day. And I feel like it's very easy to imagine that he rips off a few big runs. And at the end of this thing, just like we said in Tampa Bay, just like we said, was it against the Bills in the game they lost? Like, you know, Travion Henderson was the big playmaker. So I like Travion Henderson as a dark horse MVP.
See, and now you know what? I think that's interesting because let me ask you this. Are you worried about his snap count in his playing time? Because we both said, I don't think he's gotten the utilization that he's earned. And maybe part of that has been the fact that they're not trusting their offensive line that much. They've gone heavier in the Ramondre front. Do you think he gets the chance?
Well, that's why he's like plus 1,500, Justin,
right,
because
right.
he's probably not going to see the field that much. But I'm just saying, like, is it hard to imagine a scenario where this guy just gets the ball a couple times and rips off a few like 80-yard runs like he did against Tampa Bay, and all of a sudden you're standing there at the end of it saying, man, I mean, Travion Henderson, you know, 11 carries, 130 yards, two touchdowns.
Yeah.
That's the MVP, like, you know.
Yeah, a very James White-ish type of performance potentially.
True, but you know, yes, but you know, James White was not as explosive as Henderson is.
No,
he's more consistent,
yeah.
You know, but Henderson's got that home run hitting capability where you're right. I mean, he could end up touching the ball five times for like 11 yards. We've seen plenty of that from him this year
right.
as well. But yeah, I would say if I had to pick a score for Sunday, I'm going to call Pats 27, Seahawks 17. I feel like this is going to be more of a one-sided Patriots win than people expect it to be.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just a shameless fanboy. I don't know, but I feel really good about this game.
Yeah, I love that. In a quick little statistic for the listeners, I texted you this the other night, but the last 11 Super Bowls where the dog was a 4-point or higher dog, which the Patriots have been 4.5, pretty consistent. I think it opened up at 5.5 and went down to 4.5, and it's held steady at 4.5.
It actually opened at 3.5, and then I think it went all the way to 5.5, and now it's back to 4.5.
Okay. All right. So there you go. So now it's been holding steady at 4.5 for roughly the last week or so. And in the last 11 games where the dog has been 4 points or higher, they have covered 10 out of those 11 times, and their straight up record is 6-5. So that bodes well for the Patriots.
It does. It bodes extremely well for the Patriots. But I like I said, the main reason I like the Pats is just because I think May is being undervalued. And I think part of that was injury. And I'm just banking and betting on that he doesn't have the massive injury.
Right.
And that's just from reading the tea leaves this week too. And some, you know, there was reporting today, the practice was closed, but from sources in the organization, he threw the ball really well.
Good.
You know, way he spoke about his own injury today, which I think was a very different tone than a few days ago.
Yep.
Way Vrabel's, you know, so like, it just feels like the injury, whatever it was, and I think it was a factor. I don't think it's going to be a factor on Sunday. And I just feel like May has been undervalued. We saw what this kid could do all season long against really good defenses and really tough spots. And I just feel like, look, let's not get overly, you know, down on him because he had a couple of mediocre games in terrible weather against great defenses.
Yes, I would agree. Totally agree.
All right, Justin, any final thoughts on this game before we wrap it up and begin the countdown to Super Bowl Sunday?
Now, you know what? I'm super, super excited. And you know what I really want? I really want a parade. I was talking about it with some friends the other day. Listen, all of the championships we've won in Boston over the years, the Patriots, the Red Sox, the Celtics, the Bruins. You know, I've never gone to a single parade.
What?
Never gone to a single parade. It almost feels sacrilegious. So if the Patriots could bail me out here and get another parade back in town so that I can be there and say I finally went to a championship parade.
How did you miss all those parades? These all happened in like your whole like youth, dude, your whole coming of age, high school, college.
I don't even know. I couldn't even tell you. I feel bad even saying it, but I'm counting on the Patriots. Get me a parade. I will be there this time.
Well, I got to say, you know, that's really sad because the parade is so much fun. And
I know.
Literally, I would say one of the funnest days of my life was the Patriots' first Super Bowl parade, the Super Bowl 36 parade. You were seven or eight, so you weren't going to that one. But I that was just unbelievable. It was so well attended. It was a freezing cold day. There was like 1.5 million people in the city of Boston, literally could barely move around. Huge party. And it was totally unexpected. Yeah. And I think that that's what made it so special, because for many of us who grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, Boston sports were like a joke. They were a laughing stock. And we had never really seen a title in our lifetime. And then, you know, that title was just totally like unexpected, amazing experience. And the whole city celebrated. So it was a great day. I've been to, I think, pretty much everyone. The only parade I didn't go to with the Patriots was actually the one, the last Super Bowl, because I went to that one. I went to the Super Bowl and my flight wasn't home yet, so I missed the parade. But the parade is a truly great experience, so you got to go if they do win this game.
I am. I already told my wife, I said, look, I got to be at that parade. So
you come with us. You come with your godson.
I will be there 150%. Yeah. So Patriots just got to take care of business on Sunday. I'll see them there.
So let me ask one more thing before we wrap this up. What does it mean if they win, and what does it mean if they lose? What are we saying about this franchise if they win? Let's start with if they lose, because we'll end on a positive note. So what does it mean if they lose?
If they lose, I still think they've put them put themselves in a position where they're such a young team. They've exceeded all expectations. They've gotten here quicker than anybody thought, and they have the two most important pieces to any championship recipe, which is the head coach and the quarterback. So even if they lose, I still think this organization has a bright future. I think they've not only put themselves back on the map in terms of being a contender, but I think they have redesignated themselves a place where players will want to come play. Right? There was a
100%.
There was a time period here where this was a black hole for free agents in trades, right? So I think they've reversed all of that. And I think just by being ahead of schedule, even if they lose, they've set themselves up for future success.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the future is bright for this franchise. As we said, you know, there's no guarantees, but you got the coach, you got the quarterback. Most likely that's like 80% of the battle right there. So I think the future is super bright. And look, whether they win or lose, I would say this, but certainly if they lose, then it comes down to Robert Kraft spent a ton of money this past offseason, but this team still has a ton of cap room. So the opportunity is going to be there for them to spend more money and improve this team even more. One of the things about this team is that they hit a huge win, and almost every free agent they signed was a success. They got to go out and do it again, you know, next year in the offseason. So if they lose, this team is super well positioned to contend, I think, for the next 5 years. And if they win, Justin, I'll say this. If the Patriots win their seventh Lombardi trophy on Sunday night, I think that would cement them as not only the greatest franchise in the history of the National Football League, and being the only franchise that has seven Lombardi trophies, all of them in the modern salary cap era, mind you, but arguably the greatest franchise in the modern professional sports era, going back to maybe, you know, the Canadians of the 70s and the 80s. There were a few real dynasties. The Yankees of the mid 90s, could you argue? But the Patriots would be of this century anyways, and we're 26 years into the century. They would be the best sports franchise in all of professional sports, I think, in this century if they win on Sunday.
Yeah, undoubtedly. In the two things I think that, you know, you really benefit from if they win, right? First off, you're able to get one while you still get your quarterback on his rookie contract, right? And that gives you still a ton of flexibility, especially with the way these quarterbacks are getting paid. Because we know Drake May, when his time is up, is going to command top dollar, right? Chances are he might even reset the market. So if you can get one with a quarterback on a rookie contract, that's huge. The other, and I think maybe the biggest thing about the Patriots winning on Sunday is that if you can get the monkey off your back, Vrabel in May, right, and you can get a championship under your belt and basically free roll yourself for the next 5 to 10 years without the pressure of saying you need to win a championship, you need to win a championship. Now, there's obviously always going to be pressure to win a Super Bowl because that's just who the Patriots are. That's what Boston sports is. But if you can get a championship out of the way now in Vrabel's rookie year, in May's second year, that takes all of the pressure off of your young quarterback and off of your head coach. And I think that allows you to go out and truly, truly play without any impediments moving forward.
Yeah, and that was one of the things I think that was really understated about Brady's career is like winning that title in the second year took so much pressure off him. And 100%. We've seen how quickly that narrative of, oh, he can't win the big one develops. And if May loses on Sunday, I mean, it's not going to be long before you hear people starting to say he can't win the big one. Yes. So, you know, and I think in that sense, it is super critical for his confidence and sort of the pressure factor that they do win this game on Sunday. It will take a lot of the pressure and really, and right from the beginning, just end that narrative that I feel like it still haunts so many quarterbacks in this league. Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Matt Stafford. I mean, we could go on and on. Yep. Justin Herbert can't win the big one. Yep. You know, so you put that to rest right from day one. If May wins on Sunday.
Exactly. So, yeah, but I feel really good about it. I'm super excited. I think hopefully, knock on wood, we'll be watching together this Sunday. So, go Patriots. And here it is. We're here. I mean, it's all seasons come down to this, you know, all these episodes, all these weeks. Here we are. We get to cheer for our team on Super Bowl Sunday.
It's been an amazing season, whatever happened on Sunday. It really has. And like you talk about entertainment, this is entertainment. This was like great, you know, and you just hope they pull it out in the end.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, we want to thank everyone that watched or listened to this episode of the Ultimate Patriots podcast. Special shout out to my father, Dennis Tian Sr., recovering from surgery and a bad kidney stone at the hospital, Beth Israel Hospital, hoping to be discharged on Friday. So he will be watching the game, we hope, from home on Sunday with all of us. We want to give him a special shout out. Thank you to everyone. Enjoy the game. Enjoy the moment. And savor every minute. And I hope that I will see each and every one of you at a parade on Tuesday in chilly Boston. Be good, be healthy, be well, be safe, everyone. Yeah.